I've never walked into a room so silent before. This is, you know what, just have a good time. And if you want to applaud, you applaud.
Looks like they didn't want to applaud.
Sure does.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets. Around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. Good to have you with us. Good to have... Oh, Desi Doyen is here with us as well for a change. Hi, Des. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's okay, weird times we're in.
You think? By the time that many of you hear today's show, I suspect the government, the American government, may be shut down, or what they call a partial federal government shutdown, one where the President of the United States essentially gets to decide which portions of the government stays open, even as those forced to work under such a mandate must do so without pay. He gets to decide which are the essential workers, essentially. Usually, those people who work without pay are paid in full after the government officially reopens. Once Republicans and Democrats come to a deal on how to reopen the government, and the president signs on to that deal. So as of Tuesday night at midnight, as the 2026 fiscal year begins for the federal government on October 1, a whole bunch of important services to we the people will most likely become unavailable or greatly slowed down until the government is officially reopened after both parties finally agree to either keep the government open temporarily under existing spending levels with some changes here or there, or they pass a full budget bill, which is actually about 12 budget bills passed first by each congressional committee in each chamber before ultimately being adopted on the floors of both the House and the Senate, where it takes 60 votes to pass such bills, meaning that Republicans need Democrats to join them in adopting those bills if the government is ever going to reopen. But Republicans have not even been trying in recent days to negotiate with Democrats who have forwarded proposals to keep the government open so long as Republicans and the Trump administration restore huge, huge cuts, in fact, trillions of dollars in cuts to health care for the American people that the Republicans and the Trump administration have cut off. The first of those major cuts will be noticed very soon by tens of millions of Americans when the cost for their monthly premiums for health care purchased via the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare suddenly becomes a lot less affordable as of January 1. But many will likely notice even sooner because open enrollment period for the ACA begins across the country on November 1 to either purchase a new plan or continue with your existing plan. And so the people who set the rates for that insurance, they kind of need to know if there is going, if in fact the Republicans are going to cut off the enhanced subsidies that had been issued for those for Obamacare. Millions of Americans will then learn as of November 1 that their monthly premiums have skyrocketed due to Republican cuts to the program, to the monthly premium subsidies that Republicans are currently refusing to restore and really even negotiate about. Last week, Donald Trump finally agreed to actually meet with Democratic congressional leaders at the White House. He has not had a face-to-face meeting with them in the 8 months since he's taken office in his new term. before the greatest negotiator of all time abruptly canceled that meeting last week. He then unflip-flopped on it by agreeing to a meeting on Monday of this week, after which it's reported that little, if any, progress was made in that conversation. And no sooner did Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer leave the White House than Donald Trump went onto his failing social media site and posted a racist, disgustingly profane AI video of both Schumer and Jeffries, with Schumer saying things that he did not say, and with a racist caricature of a Mexican mustache drawn on Jeffries' face under a huge sombrero with the Mexican hat dance added to the soundtrack over the phony words put into Schumer's mouth, calling Democrats, quote, pieces of blank. That's what the president of the United States did. He has been remarkably sanguine about the prospects of the federal government shutting down in what would be the first government shutdown since the last time we had one, which was, yes, under Donald Trump in late 2018 and early 2019, the longest federal government shutdown in U.S. history, when Trump eventually folded his demands at the time to force congressional funding for his border wall, which, speaking of Mexican caricatures, Trump had vowed that Mexico, not the U.S., would pay for. They didn't. This time, however, he is threatening mass firings of federal workers if the government shuts down, if Democrats do not agree to help the majority Republicans kill health care for millions of Americans. And on Monday, claimed that he would immediately shut down certain health care services if the government shut down, though he didn't explain what he meant by that, and which ones he would use to literally harm American citizens. But there may be another reason that Trump is sanguine, it seems to me, about shutting down the American government, and not only because it changes the topic of discussion from the fact that there are now enough signatures to force a House floor vote on the release of the full Epstein files, which Trump has been covering up for months. But as the New York Times reports today, the monthly jobs report on Friday is expected to provide crucial evidence to economists, policymakers, and investors who are trying to determine whether a slowdown in hiring over the summer continued into the fall, and whether deeper cracks are forming in the foundation of the U.S. labor market under Donald Trump's management and his seemingly haphazard imposition of new taxes on the American people in the form of these huge tariffs against imports coming from overseas on pretty much everything. If, that is, there is a jobs report at all on Friday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which produces the monthly jobs data, will, quote, suspend all operations if Congress and the president fail to reach a deal to extend funding for the federal government before the Tuesday night midnight deadline.
So the government shutdown means the Bureau of Labor Statistics can't put out the jobs report.
Yep.
And that is potentially sort of like Trump maybe pulling the fire alarm at school in order to not have to do a test.
Well, it will certainly help. Now, keep in mind, he doesn't have to. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, or the BLS, does not have to be shut down.
Hmm.
During the last shutdown, the one that was also under Donald Trump, that was one of the agencies that actually stayed open to keep producing much-needed data on the economy. But Trump this time is choosing to shut down the BLS during a government shutdown for some reason or another. And these numbers are really important to businesses, to the economy, to policymakers, said Gregory Dacko, the chief economist at the consulting firm EY Parthenon. Flying blind amidst heavy fog is a dangerous proposition. And what he means by heavy fog is the fact that right now nobody knows really which direction the economy is going, because it had jobless rates have started to tick back up. Inflation has started to tick back up. Will that continue? Well, we may never know, at least for a while, perhaps even ever. The numbers are actually just about, the numbers for September are said to be, you know, just about ready to go, scheduled to be released on October 15. And if this government shutdown ends quickly, then theoretically those numbers could be released quickly. But the data being gathered while the government shuts down, well, that data won't be gathered, which puts questions about future BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics reports. So that's all kinds of mess coming forward. The agency, in the meantime, like so many others in the federal government, following Trump and Elon Musk's various forced Doge layoffs earlier in the year, has also been grappling with staffing shortages, which have forced it to scale back data collection in some areas. The Bureau recently posted job openings for part-time employees to help fill some of those gaps. But a government shutdown could delay the hiring process there as well. So we potentially have all kinds of messes in front of us. Similarly, by the way, as Desi reports in our latest Green News report a little bit later this hour, the National Weather Service is also now scrambling to hire hundreds of people, even as hurricane season kicks into high gear and layoffs have crippled the Weather Service's ability to produce timely forecasts and severe weather warnings. In the absence of most government data back at the BLS, economists and policymakers will now be looking to alternative sources, but apparently no private sources can fully replace data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the other government agencies, according to Kathy Jones of Charles Schwab. She said the BLS figures are the gold standard for evaluating trends in the labor market. So setting policy without those numbers, especially at a time when the Fed is very much focused on the labor market, will be difficult, she said. And given what that data likely actually looked like, well, I suspect that all of that, not being able to see it, is just fine with Donald Trump. In other Trump breaking America news today, Donald Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth summoned more than 800 of the country's top brass to a military base in Virginia on Tuesday to voice what multiple media outlets have described as a familiar litany of culture war talking points and to criticize the military that they complained had become distracted by political correctness. Now, as Hegseth's remarks went on, it became clear he spoke before Donald Trump spoke to the generals. It became clear that political correctness, or wokeness, as he referred to it many times, has to do with things like rules of engagement that prevent troops from doing stuff like, you know, committing war crimes. Those things are in place, those rules of engagement are in place, not because they are politically correct, but because if we do not respect rules about war crimes, neither will our adversaries. If we, for example, torture captured troops, well, they will torture our troops. If we target civilians, they will target civilians. You get the idea. Pete Hegseth is against such rules, and he vows to change them.
We unleash overwhelming and punishing violence on the enemy. We also don't fight with stupid rules of engagement. We untie the hands of our warfighters to intimidate, demoralize, hunt, and kill the enemies of our country. No more politically correct and overbearing rules of engagement. Just common sense, maximum lethality, and authority for warfighters.
The very rare, initially mysterious and very quickly announced call-up of the nation's generals, top generals and admirals, drew the country's military commanders away from their posts in places like Asia and Europe and points in between on very short notice.
And places that have active conflicts going on.
And it was unclear why. With a federal, especially with the shutdown of the federal government looming, any of this was done. Why Trump and his defense secretary needed to gather the country's senior military leaders from overseas deployments to talk to them face to face and tell them that they were, quote, straight out of central casting, as Trump characterized the gathering.
I mean, this
they needed to hear that.
Yeah, this is the ultimate meeting that could have been an email.
When Mr. Hegseth summoned the senior officers last week, he gave no reason for the meeting. It has no precedent in scope or scale in recent memory. The military leaders were told to expect a speech from the secretary heralding a so-called warfighter culture that Hegseth has championed since taking office, but they were given little other information. In the days leading up to the event, Democratic lawmakers and military specialists questioned the cost and the disruption to daily operations caused by this seemingly pointless meeting, as well as the security risks of putting so many top military commanders into one place, along with the president. All, it appeared, so that Hegseth could lecture military leaders with decades of combat experience on an enhanced warrior ethos, as he likes to call it, in a forum that was televised live. I'm sure he practiced long and hard in front of the mirror. Hegseth, the former Fox News weekend host who was once in the National Guard, he spoke first. He told the assembled generals and admirals that he was tightening standards for fitness and grooming, that he would tolerate no more fat generals. I think that was actually the word that he used. Cracking down even more rigorously against, quote, woke garbage, unquote, and getting rid of attacks on, quote, toxic leadership that he said had gone too far. Now, mind you, he's not getting rid of the toxic leadership. He's not saying that's gone too far, but the complaints about toxic leadership, the attacks on the toxic leadership, that is what Hegseth made clear had gone too far as he saw it. He railed against what he called, quote, stupid rules of engagement. He defended his firing of more than a dozen of the nation's top military leaders, many of whom happened to be people of color and women. Just a coincidence. It was, observes the New York Times, standard fare for Hegseth, who will undoubtedly come under criticism for the expense of flying the commanders to the Washington area as a federal shutdown looms. The generals and admirals assembled were mostly quiet during the remarks made by both Hegseth and Trump. It is, in fact, the tradition for the military to present a nonpartisan posture. Though it did seem to knock Trump off his stride a bit when he began his remarks that lasted more than an hour and included a whole lot of his usual partisan political stuff that was not particularly well welcomed by the unprecedented gathering of the nation's top generals and admirals. Pathetically, he tried to encourage them. He actually asked them, essentially to please clap.
I've never walked into a room so silent before. This is very... Don't laugh. You're not allowed to do that. You know what? Just have a good time. And if you want to applaud, you applaud. And if you want to do anything you want, you can do anything you want. And if you don't like what I'm saying, you can leave the room. Of course, there goes your rank. There goes your future. But you just feel nice and loose, okay? Because we're all on the same team.
So we got a laugh out of him there.
Yeah.
But obviously... he wanted footage of them applauding for him.
Yes.
Don't worry, I'm not going to play too much of what Donald Trump had to say at this thing. I suspect that others will. I would rather reserve that time for audio of folks standing up to this wannabe dictator and this un-American authoritarian thug. As the Times reports, the president delivered a rambling address that included familiar talking points and critiques and Mr. Trump's revelation that he had told Hegseth to use American cities where he has deployed troops as, quote, training grounds, unquote, for the military. Washington Post echoed that take, reporting that Trump delivered a, quote, meandering address, railing against his predecessor, celebrating tariffs, and floating the idea of using American cities as a training ground for the military as he painted a picture of the U.S. under attack, quote, from within. You'll recall that he has referred to people from the left as well as the media as the, quote, enemy from within. He has long said that we are the enemy. That apparently is who Donald Trump is now hoping to use the U.S. military against. In recent months, the Post observes Trump has lambasted blue cities and states as hotbeds of crime. But the speech at the Marine Corps base Quantico on Tuesday morning marked the first time that he publicly directed military leaders to be a, quote, major part of fighting a, quote, war from within. In cities like San Francisco and Chicago and New York and Los Angeles, cities from which I suspect many of those generals may actually come. I'm not sure if they want to be a major part of a war from within against San Francisco and Chicago and New York and Los Angeles. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. Quote, we've brought back the fundamental principle that defending the homeland is the military's first and most important priority, said Trump, while America is under invasion from within. The military follows strict customs and courtesies, which include showing deference and respect to the commander-in-chief and refraining from showing approval or disapproval of political comments. On Tuesday, laughter, according to the Post, occasionally followed a joke, but Trump's attacks on former President Joe Biden were met with silence. Good for them. Trump escalated his rhetoric against the, quote, radical left, repeatedly calling the group the enemy within and insisting that he should be able to use military force in American cities. Willamette University U.S. history professor Seth Kotler quipped on Blue Sky in response to all of this, quote, he's grabbing American democracy by the Posse Comitatus Act. When you're a Republican, he adds, the Supreme Court lets you do it. New York Times opinion columnist Jamel Bowie was somewhat less amusing in his post to Blue Sky, where he wrote, quote, the president of the United States wants to use the American military to kill American citizens on American soil. That's the whole story, said Jamel. As Trump, it's hard to disagree, hard to argue with that. As Trump wrapped up his address, some officers stood and lightly applauded at the end. Others remained seated. I suspect they'll be marched out of the room and executed. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Not yet. That's North Korea. We're not there just yet. As far as I know. As to the to that war that Trump hopes to wage against the, quote, the radical left that he describes as the enemies from within, the war within, that clearly he hoped to get approval on from the assembled generals and admirals, despite the Posse Comitatus Act that bars the use of the U.S. military against Americans in almost all cases. Well, that war, or at least Trump's attempt to start one, those continue to pace this week after in recent weeks he has ordered National Guard soldiers to Los Angeles, to Washington, D.C., to Portland, Oregon, over the objections of the local political leaders to supposedly assist immigration efforts and combat crime, though I think he gave it all away during that speech at Quantico today. This is about a war from within. This is about attacking the radical left, who he sees as his enemies, despite the fact that they are American citizens. And after threatening to invade Chicago with the U.S. military for weeks, only to see direct pushback on any such deployment from the Illinois governor, J.B. Pritzker, Trump took a little baby step towards such a deployment over the weekend and into Monday, first ordering federal law enforcement troops into downtown Chicago, and then, according to Governor Pritzker, ordering about 100 U.S. military troops from the National Guard into Chicago. They're not yet there, but apparently the orders have been issued. That, at least, versus, I guess, the several thousand that Trump deployed for no reason at all out here to Los Angeles and in Washington, D.C. earlier this year. Americans who live in Chicago, apparently, is who Trump wants to use as a, quote, training ground for the most lethal military organization in the world.
But I want to salute every service member who has helped us carry out this critical mission. It's really a very important mission. And I told Pete, we should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds for our military, National Guard, but military. Because we're going into Chicago very soon. That's a big city with an incompetent governor. Stupid governor. Stupid.
The president of the United States there telling the nation's top generals and admirals that we should use American cities as training grounds for the U.S. military, calling the governor of a state that Trump says he's going to invade, calling that governor incompetent and stupid.
Classy. Always classy.
The Intercept's coverage of the Quantico remarks echoed the others. It described Trump's remarks as, quote, long, rambling, only sporadically touching on military topics. They also cited Trump's warnings about a, quote, war from within. Three different defense officials who spoke with The Intercept called Trump's speech, quote, embarrassing. The same defense officials took Hegseth to task for gathering the military's top commanders from around the world for a rant that was little different than his social media posts. One called Hegseth's address, quote, garbage, using a term the war secretary used during his speech. He calls himself the war secretary now. Another said, quote, we are diminished as a nation by both Hegseth and Trump. Quote, listening to Donald Trump was deeply disturbing, and it is clear that he is unfit for the role of commander-in-chief, one of the defense officials told The Intercept, speaking on the condition of anonymity. Quote, Trump lectured our military leaders on his victimization and inability to let go of perceived slights, past slights. A second defense official who later referenced the 25th Amendment, which, if we haven't talked about it in a while, it permits a president's powers to be transferred to the vice president when the vice president and a majority of the cabinet conclude that the commander-in-chief is incapable of performing their duties. That second defense official said, quote, this is truly disturbing. He is clearly unwell, even for Trump, adding, this is incredibly embarrassing for the United States. So let me take a quick break here from the embarrassment that is our incompetent, stupid, mentally deteriorating president, and we'll come back with some thoughts from yesterday from that governor that Trump referred to that he described to the generals as incompetent and stupid, and from another governor whose state Trump is also invading in his war from within, a war from within his mind, perhaps, because he now appears to be waging that war because of a five-year-old footage that has been running on Fox News that he saw. We'll get to that, all of that, and Desi Doyen with our latest Green News Report. That's all still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Well, before he was called incompetent and really stupid by the President of the United States on Tuesday, while the President of the United States was speaking to the nation's top military brass, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker on Monday slammed the Trump administration and U.S. Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, for the agency's new presence in downtown Chicago at a press conference that was criticizing Trump's decisions to send troops to the city of Chicago. He also accused them of, quote, harassing people for not being white. Now, I prefer to play an extended excerpt of Governor Pritzker's remarks today, not Trump's or Hegseth's, as Pritzker, unlike the criminally convicted and mentally lapsing president, actually boldly fights for Americans, not against them, fights for Americans, and yes, for the U.S. Constitution and against Donald Trump's abuse of both of them.
Moments ago, the Illinois National Guard received word that the Department of Homeland Security has sent a memo to the Department of War seeking the deployment of 100 military troops to Illinois, claiming a need for the protection of ICE personnel and facilities. What I have been warning of is now being realized. One thing is clear, none of what Trump is doing is making Illinois safer. 2 weeks ago, a man was shot and killed by ICE in Franklin Park, Illinois. Shortly after, ICE issued a statement justifying the killing, saying the federal agent was seriously injured. The Chicago Sun-Times has brought to light that the injuries were, in the agent's own words, nothing major. A man is dead. A community is shaken up. And we are yet again left with more questions than answers. On Saturday, federal agents wreaked havoc on the village of Broadview, a small suburb west of Chicago with 8,000 residents. In Broadview, people nonviolently holding signs and chanting against brutality, expressing their First Amendment rights, have been regularly attacked with chemical agents like tear gas, pepper spray, rubber bullets, and flashbangs. Agents reportedly unholstered their guns and pointed them at protesters. In their own words, ICE intended to unleash, quote, a shit show in the Broadview community. Without provocation and acting like jackbooted thugs, ICE has attacked and detained members of the press, including an independent journalist. A CBS Chicago correspondent had chemical munitions fired at her car where there were no protesters in sight. And we have received many reports of U.S. citizens being detained for simply stepping onto the public street. That brings us to yesterday. On a beautiful weekend, when families were out enjoying their day in Chicago, armed Border Patrol agents were downtown marching up and down Michigan Avenue, harassing and intimidating residents and tourists. In Millennium Park, federal agents interrogated a family as their small daughter held onto her doll and appeared to try to translate for her parents. Officers carried large, unholstered, offensive weapons downtown, dressed in camouflage and masks. Building tradesmen near Tribune Tower, simply doing their jobs, were detained by federal agents while working on a construction site. Separately, two dozen federal agents chased down a man, handcuffed him, and asked him for his papers. Meanwhile, ICE's chief offender, Gregory Bovino, has been leading the disruption and causing mayhem while he gleefully poses for photo ops and TikTok videos. Bovino even admitted on the record that they are making arrests based on how you look. Based on how you look. How you look. That's the baseline. They're not targeting violent criminals or gang members. They're arresting tamale vendors and delivery men and shaking down families. Donald Trump and Kristi Noem and Tom Homan said they were targeting the worst of the worst criminals. They lied, and they continue to lie. 60% of the individuals that ICE has taken in Illinois this year have no criminal convictions of any kind. ICE is running around the loop, harassing people for not being white. Just a year ago, that was illegal in the United States. Now, ICE is making it commonplace. That's not making America great. In any other country, if federal agents fired upon journalists and protesters when unprovoked, what would we call it? If federal agents march down busy streets, harassing civilians and demanding their papers, what would we say? I don't think we'd have any trouble calling it what it is, authoritarianism. So let's not pretend it's something else when it happens in our American cities. People of Illinois, we need your help. Get out your cell phones. Record and narrate what you see. Put it on social media. Peacefully ask for badge numbers and identification. Speak up for your neighbors. We need to let the world know that this is happening and that we won't stand for it.
Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker on Monday, the day before Trump would go on to target Chicago as a, quote, training ground for the U.S. military. The state of Illinois seemingly preparing to defend themselves from the federal government. Yesterday on this show, we told you about the conversation between Oregon's Democratic Governor Tina Kotek and Donald Trump over the weekend after she tried to talk him out of sending troops to Portland, which Trump characterized as, quote, war-ravaged, unquote, burning down. And according to his social media post, it's, quote, ICE facilities under siege from attack by Antifa and other domestic terrorists. He suggested to Kotek that Portland was burning down somehow and that he was, quote, as he said in his social media post, authorizing full force, announcing that military troops he was planning to send there to use against the people of Portland presumably could shoot to kill if they want full force, right? Remember those rules of engagement that Pete Hegseth wants to do away with? Even though none of those remarks about Portland was actually true. As Kotek told him during their phone call over the weekend, there was no need for troops in Portland. To which he reportedly responded, quote, well, wait a minute, I am watching things on television that are different from what's happening. My people tell me different. They are literally attacking, and there are fires all over the place. It looks terrible. So we suggested on yesterday's show that, yes, he is watching things that are different from what's actually happening on television, yep. If in fact he is watching Fox News, which has for years, whenever they talk about Portland, they show loop video of some fires that were set there back in 2020 during the George Floyd protests. They play them over and over again. And apparently, as Philip Bump, formerly of the Washington Post, he was their data analyst and columnist. He has his own site now. He speculated the very same thing, but he added a few specifics to it. He writes, in mid-June 2020, I noticed something weird about Fox News' coverage of the racial justice protest that had emerged in response to the killing of George Floyd. This was mid-June of 2020. He said they were often accompanied by footage of violence or vandalism that had occurred actually more than a week prior. He notes Tucker Carlson, who was then still a Fox host, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham. They were all incorporating footage into their shows that had been recorded in late May of that year. The reason for doing so wasn't subtle. He notes they and Trump, who was president, hoped to suggest that a firm hand was needed to keep the lunatic left under control. He said, what I couldn't have anticipated then was that Fox would still be using that same footage 5 years later. Mm. In an interview with NBC's Yamiche Alcindor, Trump described a conversation that he'd had with Oregon's governor. Quote, I said, well, wait a minute. Am I watching things on television that are different from what's happening? My people tell me different. They are literally attacking and there are fires all over the place. It looks terrible. Well, yes. Man who has access to the breadth of federal intelligence gathering, quips Bump. What you saw on TV was, in fact, not what was happening at the moment in Portland. So what had Trump seen? Well, given his tendency to stay tuned to Fox News, writes Bump, we can make some educated guesses. Trump made his pledge to send troops to Portland on Saturday morning this past weekend. On Friday, Fox News had several segments in which purported violence in the city was shown. One featured Trisha McLaughlin, that terrible Homeland Security spokesperson who often appears on Fox. As she was discussing an executive order that Trump had signed, the channel showed B-roll of events in Portland. They showed an encounter apparently involving tear gas that occurred back in June of this year, and then footage from protests in July of 2020, as if they were happening right now. In the next hour, Bump notes, they ran the same playbook. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich was on, talking about how dangerous the left was, next to footage of Portland violence from, yes, 2020. If this is what Trump was seeing, writes Bump, one can see how he might have been confused about the timeline. You can also see how the average Fox News viewer might be under the impression that Portland is a violent hellscape. And because Trump does not know that he's watching five-year-old footage on his TV, and either because the sycophants around him are afraid to tell him otherwise, or, by the way, they just maybe just don't want to tell him otherwise. Because of all that, Donald Trump is now invading a peaceful Portland, beginning with 200 troops. As in Illinois, Oregon's Democratic governor, because of our pathetic, deranged president, is now being forced to make the case that U.S. military troops are not needed in her state, and that no, Portland is not burning down, as Governor Kotek explained on MSNBC on Monday night.
Portland, Oregon is a beautiful, vibrant, successful city. We are not a war zone. I was out there all weekend long. People were out and about shopping, going to restaurants, going to soccer matches, going to shows. Portland is a beautiful place, and we are not under siege. There's no insurrection here. When the president makes a choice to say military troops in my state, I push back right away. We were not apprised of the reason for this. When I tried to get that from the president, it was about concerns about safety at a federal facility. And I said, look, law enforcement is on top of it. There's peaceful protests. And if people are getting out of line, they are being held accountable. I continue to not understand what the mission is here, but we don't need military intervention in Portland. And it's just unconscionable. It's nonsensical. It has nothing to do with what's actually on the ground here.
So I would say, seriously, more Democrats apparently need to watch Fox News. If Tina Kotek doesn't know what's going on here, she needs to watch more Fox News so that she and other Democrats know how Republican dupes, including the president of the United States, are being misled and played for suckers by Fox News. Seriously, if you want to know why Trump is doing any particular dumb thing, you might first take a look at what is on Fox News. That will almost always explain it. So good, in any event, for Tina Kotek for trying to stand up for Oregon against this idiocy and this idiot who is, you know, as Philip Bump called him, man who has access to the breadth of federal intelligence gathering, but apparently prefers to get his intelligence from Fox News. In the meantime, ironically, while there is no insurrection in Portland, as Governor Kotek said, and no insurrection in Chicago, as Governor Pritzker pointed out, when there was an actual insurrection in the city that Donald Trump actually lived in at the time, back in 2021, on January 6th, he took no action whatsoever to stop it, of course, because he was the one who started it. And the 15 or so insurrectionists that actually attacked law enforcement officials and actually attacked and invaded the federal building known as the U.S. Capitol at the time, where people actually died thanks to that attack incited by Donald Trump. Well, all of those actual radical right-wing radicals, well, they were all given full and unconditional pardons for their violent crimes that day, on the very first day of Donald Trump's second term in office. And so this is where we are now. a misinformed, brain-addled president ready to use the U.S. military against his own citizens in major American cities based on what old footage Fox News feels like showing him on the televisions. You know, just as so many of us tried to warn before last year's presidential election, including, by the way, Kamala Harris. Trump did an interview on Fox on October 13, 2024, less than a month before the election last year. At the time, warning about, quote, the enemy within. Just as he did to the military generals at Quantico on Tuesday. In the 2024 interview, he was clear that he did not mean immigrants inside America as the enemy within, but actual American citizens that he does not like. And that the U.S. military, he said, should be able to handle them easily enough. He told us all of this was coming. And Harris cited that interview during the campaign, warning that Trump would use the military against the American people if he was elected. And the right, of course, was apoplectic about that. How dare she? He would never do such a thing. What a scare tactic from Kamala Harris. In fact, The Hill ran an op-ed by a right-wing podcaster bro named Derek Hunter at the time about all of the lies in the presidential campaign that were being told by, yes, Kamala Harris. Not Donald Trump, but Kamala Harris was telling one lie after another. She was a way bigger liar than Donald Trump. The headline of that op-ed quote at the time, Kamala Harris's new lie. Trump will send the army after you. That was Kamala Harris's newest lie, that Trump would send the army after you. And look what Trump is doing. Well done, Derek. Green News Report is next. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate. Big sigh, wasn't it there?
Yeah. It was.
All right, I'll tell you what. Let's get to our Green News Report and then a bit of a follow-up on one of the stories we covered. A little bit of additional information we didn't have time for in our 6 minutes. That's straight ahead right after our latest Green News Report.
We always seek to prepare for the worst. At the same time, we hope for the best.
Hurricane season wakes up as National Weather Service struggles with staffing amid Trump layoffs.
We're announcing today expanded programs to help the American coal industry.
Trump administration unveils plans for taxpayers to bail out big coal. Plus, Trump Energy Department tells staffers, don't say climate change.
Oh, I'm sure they won't. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It was out of fashion with the Chardonnay set in San Francisco, Boulder, Colorado, and New York City, where I just was at Climate Week.
Actually, Secretary of Energy Chris Wright, coal is not out of fashion. It's just dirty, deadly, and expensive. Even for the Coors Light set in Oklahoma, Mississippi, and yes, West Virginia. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, are we really doing this again? Are we really going to pretend to bring back coal again?
Oh, yes. And lots of taxpayer money is going toward it.
Cool. What else you got for us today?
Well, first up, the Atlantic hurricane season is waking up. Hurricane Umberto over the weekend rapidly intensified into a monster Category 5 storm out in the open ocean, fueled by record warm waters. Studies show that rapid intensification of hurricanes, which used to be rare, now happens far more frequently than in the past due to man-made global warming driven by the burning of fossil fuels.
Like coal?
Yep. Forecasters say Umberto is pulling newly formed tropical storm Imelda away from making direct landfall in the U.S. But Imelda will still generate heavy rains and dangerous flooding along the East Coast. North Carolina Governor Josh Stein has declared a state of emergency. Imelda's rain forecast is particularly concerning for regions still recovering from destructive Hurricane Helene, which hit 1 year ago. ProPublica reports that 1 year later, some folks in North Carolina who lost homes to the storm are still struggling through red tape to obtain housing assistance from FEMA, which has also been hit hard by the Trump administration's budget cuts, mismanagement, and mass layoffs, including of federal workers who processed disaster aid applications. Now is, of course, also not a great time for the National Weather Service to be at a breaking point. Washington Post reports that staffing cuts under the Trump administration are straining forecasters who are struggling to maintain normal operations. Staffers are working double shifts to keep forecasting offices open and helping adjacent offices monitor severe weather in understaffed regions. If the government shuts down, they will be working without pay until the shutdown is over.
So they're asked to work twice as long shifts now without pay?
Yep.
In the middle of hurricane season?
Yep.
What could possibly go wrong?
In policy, the Trump administration is unveiling a new plan for taxpayers to bail out costly, polluting, uneconomical coal-fired power plants to help the coal industry, which has been declining for decades. On Monday, former fossil fuel CEO turned Energy Secretary Chris Wright announced $625 million in new funding aimed at retrofitting and reopening closed coal plants, claiming coal is needed to meet skyrocketing energy demand, even as the administration is blocking cheaper, clean wind and solar projects.
Wait a minute. Isn't Chris Wright the guy who said if renewable energy can't survive on its own without subsidies after 30 years, then I guess it ain't so good?
Yep.
But he's given money to coal that's been around for hundreds of years.
Yes.
Brilliant.
We're going to provide some funding to upgrade existing coal plants, keep them open, but coal's got a long future. Let's stop pretending it's going away, or stop wishing it was going away.
The plan also includes opening up more than 13 million additional acres of the public's lands to more destructive coal mining. Data show that coal-generated electricity is by far the most expensive, far more than wind and solar generated. The Environmental Protection Agency announced it will rescind dozens of regulations to limit mercury, CO2, and other pollutants from coal plants, and will revise regulations limiting discharge of wastewater pollutants from power plants.
So, more deadly mercury and other pollutants in the air and the water.
Yeah.
Making America healthy again.
Finally, Politico reports that the Trump administration has also ordered the Energy Department's Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy to stop using the words climate change and emissions, adding them to the department's banned word list. Words at the heart of the office's mission. It's the latest in a series of Trump administration efforts to dispute, silence, or downplay the reality of climate change.
And you know, when they're banning words, well, that's freedom for you right there. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Well, you know, one of the upsides, Desi Doyen, of the return of coal under the Trump administration, I feared we would not have reason to go back into our coal-related song library to close out the Green News Report. But now,
well, there you have it.
It's given new
one
life.
Bright spot. We could use those again.
There you go. By the way, that story that you mentioned there about Chris Wright, the Department of Energy, now
adding words to their banned words list.
Banned word list, yeah. In addition to climate change, they also are not allowing the word green.
Yes, that's right.
Decarbonization, can't use that word. Emissions. Please don't say the word emissions, because that would, be a negative somehow. Let's not talk about emissions. Also, other terms that officials gotta not say: energy transition, don't say it. Sustainability or sustainable, can't use that word at the Department of Energy. You can't use clean or dirty energy anymore. Don't say that. Also, don't say either a carbon footprint or CO2 footprint. Just don't mention it.
That's right out.
That's right out, says the head of the Department of Energy, who until he got that job was the head of a fracking company, as I recall.
Yep.
Also, don't mention tax breaks, tax credits, or subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't mention that.
Gosh, now, I wonder why.
Well, in fact, Chris Wright sort of violated that rule himself last week. He canceled $13 billion worth of funding for renewable energy projects that had been put in place by Joe Biden previously. He took shots at wind and solar incentives. Subsidies that Republicans in their so-called Big Beautiful Bill killed back in July. Those are going to be sunsetting after more than three decades of existence, some of these subsidies. And as I mentioned in the GNR right now, Wright said, quote, "If you can't rock on your own after 33 years, maybe that's not a business that's going places." That's what he was saying about the subsidies for wind and solar. You can't rock on your own after 33 years. Maybe you're no good. And yet, how long have we been giving subsidies to oil and gas and coal?
Since 1916.
And I think the recent bill just expanded those subsidies for
oil and
gas.
In other words, you'd think that Chris Wright would acknowledge that fact, but that would be some cognitive dissonance, and he can't then propagandize all the false information that he's peddling to the public.
Plus, the president might see it on Fox News and completely changes policy. All right, anyway, thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night amid the war with us. We're glad to have you here with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. That service, keeping the broadcast for free, is made possible by those of you who hit a donate button while you're there. Any amount you can afford, $5, $10, $50, $1,000 is greatly appreciated. You can also go straight to bradblog.com/donate to sign up for any amount you like on an automated monthly basis. Thank you in advance. Drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, I am The Brad Blog. Desi is
Green News Report.
There you go. We'll see you there. Until we're here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. Mary and Paul.